Get that thing away from me. Get it away from me! And shut off that damn music! And to these straps. Don't forget my ankles. Hurry!
Is there a problem, Sweet Pea?
This is a joke, right? Don't you get the point of this? It's to turn people on. I get the sexy little schoolgirl. I even get the helpless mental patient, right? That can be hot. But what is this? Lobotomized vegetable? How about something a little more commercial?
And this is Douglas.
Pretty money.
I would put that in your phone.
By the speaking of which, I don't know how you know the debauchery goes in the land of Trinidad, but in the United States of America, it is a fact that 99% of American money has traces of cocaine on it. So, if you want to get high, Damon, just go ahead, keep on licking.
I live in Jamaica. If I want to get high, I can go outside.
Damon,
it's like three steps away.
So, you weren't with us last week.
Right.
And even when we recorded The Breaking Bad, I hadn't yet released the episode last week. So, you hadn't heard the madness that we decided to put down.
You guys said a lot of dumb shit. So I'll start in order. You guys talked about pristine movie experiences, and you guys defined it really narrow to the point where if the movie is funny, people shouldn't laugh, which is ridiculous.
Yes, I agree 100% with that.
In my life, that doesn't make sense.
we should have like
what you don't want
boxes around our heads where it's laugh boxes. So when I laugh, nobody else hears it. Yes.
What you don't want is obnoxious people ruining the movie. And that is easily definable. But if something happens on the screen which is funny or exciting or unbelievable, it is the crowd's response to react, right? When The Rock flew in Furious 6, right? The whole crowd went, this is the greatest shit I've ever seen in my life. And that's what you expect. They don't want to sit there, it's silence going. Unless the movie calls for it. So, I don't know where you guys went off, but that is lunacy. But then, Andrew started talking about new shows. And you joined in like an idiot. Andrew made some felonious statements about 30 Rock not being that good. And you, instead of taking the mic stand and beating him to death, just allowed him to talk nonsense.
What was I supposed to do, Damian? Damian!
Read that line.
Okay.
I haven't seen this.
So the line is, clearly, punch Andrew in the face.
And Douglas approves, by the way. Just to let you know.
Let me take off my glasses.
Andrew.
let me take off my glasses.
Right, you guys were
just
talking about...
Just make sure you hit my left side.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been funny.
It's okay.
You know, and Andrew's like, yeah, it's probably going to be 30 Rock. And you went, you're like, hold up, son. 30 Rock is amazing. And I'm just like, no. And you just sat there. Like, that makes sense. Right? Andrew, don't talk nonsense.
I thought that was a point.
I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's really funny. Trophy Wife is also surprising. I thought it was going to be awful garbage.
I don't know
it's,
that.
Malik Ackerman.
Mailing,
whatever.
Yeah.
And
I didn't
she's
know
in
she
this
was
new
in
show
where
she plays a trophy wife.
Awesome.
She's like the third wife, and it's with a lot of people that we recognize. It's funny. It should have been really cynical because the name of the show is Trophy Wife, but they found ways to make it funny. and engaging. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not good.
I must admit, to this day, this is now a week after the last episode, plus maybe I'd say another week, maybe week and a half since I've actually watched the first episode. I'm only 30 minutes through the first episode.
The second episode had the Sam Jackson thing, and that is by far the best part of the entire show. Kill the fish tank. But nothing else about that show. You know what it reminds me of? Andrew will hate me for saying this.
Mm-hmm.
But it reminds me of a show with a house made of dolls. Kind of terrible. And, you know, like the new
show. I saw someone tweet out jokes saying, what if Coulson is a doll?
Yeah. Most of the new shows are bad. By any means, is this British show?
Oh God! Bad. And Damien, why? Why is Justin in bad television? Why?
Who's Justin?
Justin
from Luther.
From Luther. Yes, Justin Bieber. Why is Justin Bieber in bad TV? Justin from Luther is in a British TV show.
Justin Timberlake.
And I couldn't even get through the first episode, Damien.
I've watched all three so far. Because he's in it.
Is Justin the second police officer?
Yeah, he's the youngster.
He's the one that
he's
the
youngster.
Luther.
Yes.
Alright, let's make it
Luther's
sure.
Luther's right-hand man. Or right-hand boy.
Yeah. So it seems the world is just waiting for Walking Dead to come back tomorrow.
Yep.
So that we can pretend TV matters again. Because the new TV is bad. Old TV, the only thing that I've watched that is still good is Mindy. Mindy's terrific. There's James Franco is in the first two episodes.
Yep.
It's really good.
Yep.
That shows. She's real dumb. I like it. But that's pretty much it. And the movie popular was, but it's bad. Like, let's not kid ourselves. But speaking of bad movies, Andrew.
Can you describe the whole story in your own words?
What? The entire story. I guess I better pee first.
I'm interested in the way we tell stories about our lives. About the fact that the truth about the past is often ephemeral and difficult to pin down.
Well, I guess if you could start by describing...
This week, I asked my co-hosts to work alongside with me as... I can't even stop laughing, man. As we watch the newest documentary by Sarah Polley.
That's like the best thing we ever.
The stories we tell. This documentary is about the family, Sarah Polley's family, and all of the stories about her family, all of the intricacies of everything that went on, especially with her mother who passed away when she was very young and such. And it's... I think Damon is giving me the look of just being like, you're going to go on yourself for a while.
You're doing a terrible job of pitching this movie.
It's a very interesting documentary in the fact that it poses interesting questions that I feel a lot of people don't really have within their own families. Maybe it's because their families don't have this kind of story attributed to them. But I don't know many families which would go in this detail as to their own history. And I mean, people can all tell stories of, oh, you were in grade school and your teacher asked you to find out who your greatest grandfather was, and you went and you found out his name, and that was pretty much it. But this movie in itself, what I pretty much attached myself to is how I felt it worked with the documentary format almost differently than many other documentaries do. And as you can see with this movie, you're going to be having lots of past footage, new footage, and even reshot footage, which I was even questioning as I was watching the film as to what was reshot, what wasn't, because parts of it you could tell, obviously, like, why would a camera be on at that point in time in your private life? There are parts of it where you could tell she was in the process of making the documentary. And it would make sense that the camera would be on for one reason or another. Even the use, the switching of cameras between some old Super 8 camera they must have been using and the current digital cameras. I really adored the way that it brought out its own story, because when the movie starts up, they just kind of hit you with all of the people we're going to be talking to, but they never tell you who these people really are. You know, because you kind of already got into the movie knowing it's about the family, that they have some association, but it's this weird thing where you're almost waiting for that person's turn to come up and mention uncle, brother, sister, cousin, friend of friend, to understand the relation and how they fit into the story itself. But I kind of think my favorite, the point in this movie where I realized that I was really going to come out loving this movie and I'm going to have a really interesting time hearing Damon and Douglas tell me that I'm fucking lying, is this point where you almost see behind the curtain, where you can see Sarah trying to decide, as she shares all of these documents, all of these emails, trying to decide as to how she's actually wanting to express this story, where I can't really tell exactly what the point is, where she goes from, I want to know the truth, to I'm going to share the truth. And there's a point where you're seeing, in that Super 8 footage, actors being dressed, right? You see people, like, when they're showing you the old Harry and some guy getting a mustache painted onto himself, and you're like, oh, so 80% of that was reshot footage, and all of this just felt, it felt so much better knowing that this movie probably isn't finished as it is, in that we could probably leave the camera on for another three months and find so much more interesting things going on in this family. I don't really know where else to go from there right now, but I'm going to hand it to Douglas, because I'm not ready for Damien. Like, I have to prepare myself mentally for Damien's response to this movie.
Okay, so I wouldn't say that this was a horrendous movie, but what I will say about this movie is,
remember,
that
you can't go to TIFF again if you
apparently not. No. Yeah, my visa has been revoked by one Ryan.
Well, she is Canadian, so
Ryan McNeil. So
Sarah Polly is the president of Canada.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently. There were two significant moments in this movie for me. The first, which for me kind of describes a little bit, not exactly, but a little bit of my feeling about this movie, was when one of Sarah Polly's brothers, or no, sisters rather, or half-sisters or whatever she is, says to her, I think they're miking her up for her interview, and she's just like, Why the fuck does anybody want to know about, you know, our story? This regular story. What's so special about us? And I said to myself, yeah, what is so special about you? And guess what? It's not really that special about them. The story itself was okay. You know, it was a story about Sarah Polly trying to figure out who she, well, not necessarily who she is, but where she comes from, and is her family really her family, or, you know, does she have a father somewhere else, or, you know,
I am your father.
The usual sort of Star Wars story. But anyway,
that's
anyway,
a running joke. People should just walk up to her and just go.
That might have been one of the jokes they were throwing at
that. Okay, so.
I'm not getting into Canada.
So the story itself is okay. The way it's told, I don't think I'm a big fan of it. It didn't. That's the thing about movies. I know when a movie is good when I'm just head over heels deep inside of it, and nothing can pull me out. And I was always outside of this movie. I was never engaged, really, and that made me sad. Because the truth of the matter is, this story is actually a little bit interesting. I don't know if it's the way it was told or however it was, but there's actually a point in the story later on in the movie, close to the end, I'd say maybe two thirds in, when this movie stops and it essentially says, okay, watcher of me, I am about to explain to you why this movie is bad, right? And I'm sure Andrew must have noticed, because my response to it was very loud, very ostentatious. I laughed my ass off when it reached to that point.
I'm trying to. I think I know what point you're describing.
It was so funny.
But and I like that point for a completely different reason. but I, just to make sure, it's Harry's
yes.
explanation of
yes.
why he won't like the movie itself.
Yes, Harry's like, listen, Sarah. I love you, right? You're my daughter. And clearly, you know, shit
well,
got crazy between us. But listen. Here is why this movie will never be good. Right? And he lays it out. And I'm just like, yeah, guess what? You're kind of right, you know, boss. Well, no. I don't know if he's right or he's wrong. But it's just a funny thing to be going through a movie and being like, boy, this movie really isn't that good. And then for the movie to acknowledge, listen, here are the reasons why this movie can never be that good. And I'm just like, wow, okay. But the truth of the matter is, I don't want to say definitively, I hate this movie and nobody should love it. Because it's kind of, this is, Damien has musicals, I have documentaries. For me to like a documentary, it needs to be something extremely special. I have liked documentaries in the past, but
where they're lies.
Shut
all up. Lies.
But if you look at the documentaries, if you look at the documentaries that I like, generally those are probably the ones that people cite as the greatest documentaries ever made, so to speak. So
wow, that's pretty neat.
What are you doing?
I bet if I made him watch a Thin Blue Line, he'd probably hate it.
I feel like
nobody,
I'd like that movie.
Nobody can hate the Thin Blue
Line. I think like I'd like that movie.
That's like a rule.
Yeah. But
sure.
Either way, I didn't like this movie that much, and it's Damien's turn, and I really want to see this last one. It's
very cool. Right. Now, Andrew is expecting me to be all. Rah,
oh, I have the same thing. Mine sucks. Yeah.
But that's not the case, Andrew. Like, the movie, at the start of the movie, right, I know who Sarah Paul is. We all know who Sarah Paul is, right? As the actress slash director, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is in a movie that I love, Mr. Nobody, and she directed a movie that Andrew hyped to all heaven and
wait,
turned out
to be
bad.
Wait, you love Mr. Nobody?
Yeah, I love that movie.
How do you love that movie?
It's so weird. It's
How
so
do you
weird.
Love that movie?
It's so weird.
Moving
I love
forward.
It. Love it. I love it. I've seen it so many times. It's so weird.
But it's so not good.
Whatever, though. you're probably right, but I don't care.
I was almost certain that you hated that movie.
No. And then she did Take This Waltz, and Andrew came and went, this is the best movie we've ever seen. Oh, shit. And I sat there and went, this movie, holy shit, this movie isn't that good. And then Andrew said, you know, watch this. And I went, all right, fine. Let's see. I thought that it was her going around to famous people and going, you know, why do we tell the stories we tell? And at the start of the movie, you know, it was just these single name persons. And I went, all right, fine, maybe I don't know any of these people's faces because, you know, they're the writers of these stories. And then I realized quickly that, nope, this is just about her family and whatever. And I sat there. And I sat there and sat there and was waiting for, you know, what was going to make this story special. And what was supposedly special about the story was the fact that, you know, her mother had an affair or several affairs, and she was born out of one of those affairs, and she didn't find out until she was older, and it changed nothing about her relationship with her family and her father. All it has done is given her essentially a second family that she can speak to, and he happened to be famous or whatever. And they told the story, and at the end of the story, I went, alright, this is a good story, told adequately, but there's nothing like nothing special about this movie. And as Douglas said, there was a point in the movie where the guy said, look, if you want this to be interesting to a wide array of people, you can't do this thing that you're doing. Telling it from everybody's perspective, no matter how insignificant their perspective, all you're doing is just telling, you know, creating this amalgam, and you know, you're not getting to anything. You know, he said truth or something like that, but I'm pretty sure truth in is not what he means. Not in the,
yeah, yeah. Essentially, he's saying you can't get deep enough, which is right. What he actually, I think he said those words too.
Right. And when he said it, I'm like, yeah, if she had just taken it from one person's perspective, right, and just gone, you know, let me, you know, weave this story so that it is as exciting as possible, you know, and end it somewhere that, you know, so build and build the story so that, you know, at the end you realize that, oh shit, or something like that, right? But instead, all the information was given to you up front, like 15 minutes into the movie, and then, you know, they just kind of went on and on. The movie is almost 2 hours, and at the end of the movie, I just sat there going, I don't find any of this. This is a documentary that people who don't like documentaries will watch and point to and go, that is why I do not like documentaries. Because it has, there's all this internet hurrah around it, but it doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel substantive. I don't want to say, you know, her story isn't to be told or no one would ever want to hear it. All I'm saying is, for the amount of attention that this documentary has gotten, I'd have thought it would have been something spectacular, but it isn't. It isn't even really that good. It is okay.
At best.
Right?
Agreed.
And I was hoping... usually with documentaries and the internet, it is like the only area where the internet gets it right. Whenever there's a consensus, is usually pretty good. Now, I have found reasons not to like some of them. Like, there's Zachary. The internet fell over themselves with that, and I didn't like it, but I realized that that is a personal reason. There's nothing that I can point out about the documentary or how the documentary was done that I could say, alright, that is why objectively I would say that this is what I want. But with this, there's really nothing there. It's just people sitting down. The talking heads, and then she cuts it in with, you know, some footage, and there's a guy reading a story, and I just sat there and go, this, it is not engaging.
I'd like to also say, I'd like to also say that there were very many what? Stop it.
Oh my god.
That was okay, Andrew. That was not funny, but
that was one time.
But yes, there were also very many booms in the shots, and that's just unprofessional.
Yeah, that's come on, to see the booms. I just expected a lot more.
I have to say, I have, you know, I've given her some leeway for a long time since she was in Baron Munchausen, but.
That's finally
moment. Yeah. She, Terry G gave her the stamp of approval. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take it back.
Wow.
Do you have that power?
Well, I
don't know, but
it anymore. Might as well give it to Douglas. The last good thing Terry G did.
Oh, shut up! You.
See, this is
bastard.
Really, this
tell
is
me.
Really difficult.
Listen, what? What's the last good thing
Almost
Terry G?
Anything Terry G has
really
done is
good. Parnassus.
Uh-huh. I don't know about Parnassus. All right.
But
let's.
And that was what, 3 years ago?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a few years. That right. was no, that was when Thingler died. So probably like 5 years ago. Is it that?
Yeah,
one?
That was a good.
That was the last movie he did.
Right.
So
was it the last movie he did?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. I mean, he
that's
has a new one coming out. No.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, but even if we go to recent times, let's say I think this one came out in the late '90s. You have
Recent times like the late '90s.
But Terry G is one of those directors where that's recent times.
I love Terry G. It is irrational, but I love him.
I will not speak further then on the point. I shall not belabor it.
This is really difficult because it's easy for me to just be against you guys when you're violently negative towards me. But like when you're just like, yeah, it was just, I'm like, can I really fight them to push them further? I don't think I can.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you guys.
I should try.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys, like, just to see if it's just my perspective and what I latched onto with this movie. But something that I kind of liked a lot was that more and more throughout this movie, as we were hearing this story being told as personal as and as who should give a shit kind of story it is, I kind of got more and more invested into seeing, regardless as to how it really happened, but into experiencing Sarah Polley making these discoveries about herself and her family. We can say that. I don't want to put it on the same level, but it felt almost just like any noir detective film that we've been talking
about.
I'm not trying to equate it to these movies and their execution of general mystery storytelling, but just the idea of she starts out with this very small understanding where it's really just been a joke, right? Where, yeah, we can laugh about it, but at the end of the day, I keep this in my mind as a solid truth. And then as she goes around, and she even says it in the movie, where she feels almost like she's not really searching for any answers about herself, but she's just trying to find out more about her mother, who she didn't know that much of, because she died when she was young. And as you see all of these stories come together talking about her mother, you get this feeling, and then it diverts completely into the actual story of Sarah finding all of these discoveries of herself. I'm curious if that portion of the movie affected you at all, or if you just kind of left it alone.
Well, the thing about this movie was that really and truly, there weren't that many revelations, and all of the revelations ended about half an hour in, right? So at about the half an hour mark, you knew everything that you knew at the end of the movie and nothing more, really. And the thing about this movie was, it's, the more I think about what Harry was saying, is the more I actually think it's true. Because of the way that she did it, and the sort of breadth in terms of people and points of views, and just general conversations that she's having, right? She isn't able to kind of zone in on what her true story for this movie is. For example, right? One of her siblings, from the previous marriage, from her mother's previous marriage, speaks about, you know, how her mother was probably the first person in Canada to ever not win her children in a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, we were abused.
Right.
That is,
yeah.
That is as much as we get of that story of abuse, right? And I'm not saying that this should be a story about children being abused, but why is that? Even that one-off statement, why is that in this movie? It shouldn't, if this is a story about her mother and her finding out about her mother. If you want to talk about abused children, then go more into that. If you want to talk about your mother, then go into your mother. And I know I'm using one specific example. I know I'm using one specific example, but I think that holds for a lot of this movie. That, you know, she's got kind of this broad brush, and she covers or tries to cover quite a bit, but you never, or at least for me, and it seems that Damien is also, you never quite get engaged in the film, because it's all a lot of, oh by the way, here's another piece, and there's never, I don't want to say a coherence, because at the end of the day, she does tell the story of, you know, the love, or maybe lack thereof, between her parents, and things like that. But It's never one story. It's just not as focused as it needs to be.
So, all right, bringing that example of abuse, and I'm going to posit a theory.
Okay.
I'm mainly going on my idea of this movie of she doesn't know, right? Sarah doesn't know her mother that well. She doesn't know what her mother knew or didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
A positive theory that her mother, who lost her children, finds out that they're being abused and realizes there's nothing she can physically do about it or emotionally do about it at that point. Just leaving it in there as just another characteristic to kind of paint of her mother as to what she was going through at that point in time of her life, where she didn't know. And this is me completely theorizing what her mother, what Diane Polly is. Because just like this movie, even though it never categorically nails down who Diane Polly is, other than us seeing a black and white film of her on television, and what I'm sure we can't even assume is a real footage of her on stage,
mm-hmm.
Because we got to see that shot of the actors. Ponying up, that's wrong. playing, dolling up, and all sorts of stuff to play the character. Are we ever supposed to believe that this movie is a picture of Sarah Polly's mother? I'm not quite sure. But is it that broad stroke nature of a picture? Is it something where we've put enough things on the table that if you look at it right, you'll see something, and is that something more than what we had before? Probably.
Right.
But, well, I don't know, Andrew. I mean, when you're watching a movie like this, you want to feel a part of the story. You want to get some... I'm so upset with Damian. This is why I can't think. He has fucking changed my background.
Mm-hmm.
He has added widgets
mm-hmm.
to my phone. I'm just... anyway. So I'm trying because I did have something that I wanted to say to you, right? But very much derailed by Damian White.
I'm a child. Father told me that I would
stop. So okay, you were saying we're getting a picture of Diane, and I don't know if. I don't know if what you wanted or what you saw was actually represented. I mean, as you say, you know, you're saying specifically to the point where, you know, you hear about the abused children, you're saying, boy, you know, what's being represented is that Diane found out, and no, that's never represented, right? I mean, you can kind of, the question has to be asked in your head, did she know and would she do something about it? But there was no more on the screen other than, by the way, we were abused. And when he said that, the question in my mind came up, do you mean like she beat you?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you mean like she touched you in the naughty place?
Right,
please.
Abuse
I'm
is
not,
a,
cause,
a big word.
Yeah, it's a big word, right?
The umbrella is very large.
Yeah.
What exactly are we talking about?
Exactly. So something and
verbal
something
abuse,
as
let's
yeah
that's
well
real
well
abuse.
No I don't think that
abuse.
Would I don't think that would have made tears well up in his eyes.
There
okay.
Are people who...
so like I think even once you put a topic right any even a reference to a topic as hot and just I think it brings out a certain level of emotional response in anybody who watches, who is going to watch your movie. If you put something like that in there, you can't just kind of be like, "Oop, I take that back. Sorry, I didn't mean to keep that in there. It was a joke." So, but you know, so I was a little bit weirded out, or that caught me as a little odd that was just in there and nothing was ever done. But just overall, this movie, it just bounces from one person to another. And oh, what I really wanted to say, in the so you finally find out what Sarah Polly is really going for, right? So Sarah Polly says she is trying to her overarching theme in this movie is to really show not necessarily a picture of her mother, but really to show that, you know, the stories we tell, which clearly is where the name comes from, are different. And, you know, people will remember things differently. People will, just like the movie we watched at TIFF, Andrew, Eleanor Rigby, people, you know, depending on who is...
I thought, I'm like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, depending on who's talking, memory is not just influenced by, you know, just the fact that you may or may not have forgotten things, but just, you know, you want to have the power, or maybe you want to, you want certain things to be more pronounced than others because of whatever selfish or maybe not even selfish, maybe just because you want your friend remembered in a certain light, right? And what Sarah Polley wanted to do was show those differences, to go from one person to another and see how that story differs. But if you're not hearing the same story from all of these people, then that doesn't happen. I think the only thing that I can just recall off at the top of my head that even played somewhere close to that was when a few of our friends said that she was not open with her relationship with Harry, and Harry was like, no, we were pretty open with it. I think that's the only thing that that at least in my mind, from what I recall, and I know I'm not going to remember everything, and I'm sure that I may have also missed things that Polly wanted to put below the surface. But that's the only big thing that I noticed in that went along that theme. And so if that is your intention, then unfortunately, at least from my viewpoint, she failed. And while I don't want to go as far as to say this movie is a failure, I think the movie has or could have been a strong film and had a bit of a story to tell, but I just didn't... It just wasn't that engaging. It didn't carry me along for the full ride, which a movie should.
Andrew is doing what he always does when he finds movies that he wants to like, is that he essentially fabricates this world around a movie that is not in the movie. Both of you do it. In fact, everyone does it. You guys did it with Prometheus because you're high and drunk. But that is what he's doing.
She bent when she was running.
He's taking outside influences and you trying to apply them with the movie, which is fine. But that doesn't make the movie. Like, your attachment to the movie might be greater, but it doesn't make the movie that is presented any better. The movie lacks focus. That is the real crime of the movie. There could have been a lot of things that she honed in on and made, you know, more exciting as her father, her second father, or real father, whoever it was said. You know, you can't dig deep when you're trying to share everyone's point of view. And that is precisely what happened. There's many, many things that, you know, could have been interesting about the movie, but came off, you know, very, you know, kind of one note, kind of, you know, this happened and this happened and then someone else says this happened. And by the end of the movie, you go, alright, I have a sense now of what happened, all the events, but it wasn't exciting at all, because there's no focus, there's nothing driving the movie along. So, I don't know, the movie isn't good, Andrew. It's not bad, it's not a bad movie, but if there are 100 documentaries that people should watch, this should be like the 90th one that they watch, because there's so much, there's infinitely better documentaries than this. This is like, I wouldn't recommend this to anybody unless you're a Sarah Polley fan, which there's two of those people in the world and you seem to be one of them. Don't understand where all this affinity comes from for this girl, because like, she's, what has she done that has the internet so attached to her? What is it? Because, of course, you know, I don't really. Is there something outside of her movies and her acting that she does that draws
basically
people
it's the
into
film
her?
She's directed. This is
which
her third
one?
Film.
What was the first one?
I think it's called. I know, and before I say the title, I'm probably going to fuck it up, and it's not the movie you think it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Away From Us or Away We Go. It's not the
no,
one.
No, it's not the good one, of course.
It's a different movie, and I haven't seen it yet. It's about an old couple.
Okay.
And then comes Take This Waltz, which
right.
I talked about last year. Was it last year or the year before?
Take This Waltz
was
last
year.
And then this one.
So we've got two movies. One which I think is bordering on bad, and the other one which is just okay.
Well, we haven't seen the
first
one.
We haven't seen the first one.
And based on the evidence of her two movies,
I'll never get it to look the same.
No, you won't. Based on the evidence, she's okay. That's a nice, and that is the nicest way I can say. She's okay as a director. Hopefully, she'll direct something that I want to see. If I see the first one, it's terrific. Then I'll have some. There'll be something there. But as far as I'm concerned, her name being attached to anything is essentially white noise at this point, because I have no affinity towards her. If things like this is what she's going to continue to do, then I won't be watching a lot of her things. Not because it's bad, it's just that it isn't something that I know will entertain me.
Mm-hmm.
And documentaries, I like documentaries to inform me about something, you know, something, even if it is something as, you know, as seemingly boring as sushi, right? That documentary about
that
the
documentary.
Guy who is a crazy lunatic over sushi.
Jiro makes
Jesus
sushi.
Dreams of sushi.
Dreams of sushi.
Right?
Love that documentary.
I watched that moment. This guy is a madman. And this documentary should have been boring, but it is not, because he's a lunatic. And then, because they could focus and spend time on him descending more and more into madness, you go, yeah. But nothing like that takes place in this one. And we even talk about documentaries that I really and truly love and watch a lot, like Senna and, you know, Restrepo, Tabloid, you know, those that play with the documentary form and, you know, give you all this information and, like, force you to be interested. Even if you didn't want to, they, like, grab a hold of you early and go, you're going to sit here and enjoy this for the rest of the however long the movie.
It's the questions, boy. It's the questions. It's the questions. Come on. The questions. It's the questions, boy. It's the questions. It's the questions, yeah. The questions. It's the questions, y'all. It's the questions. It's the questions. Dig it. The questions. It's the questions, boy. It's the questions. So, yeah.
With the question last week, they might even comment on it. My question of the pristine experience. The internet didn't much care for my questions.
Yeah.
But there was one response, and it felt very much a tangential response to the question, from Cinema Conversations, who kind of wanted me to define pristine, kind of the direction you were going with, like, oh, so your version of pristine is just silence. And he kind of went more into talking about what he imagined was the reasoning as for people taking out their phones and doing shit in the theater.
Awful people.
And he was kind of positive that for the most part,
these
people,
they are dirtbags.
Other than being inconsiderate assholes and dirtbags, were for the most part just not engaged by the film they're watching.
No, I'm very sorry. Young man, that is not. There are social contracts that we all sign when we are born into society, right? Some are very serious and enforceable by police, and some are not. This one isn't, but it should be. These people don't care about others around them, and that is why they do it. They don't see it as a problem. I am important, and yes, we're in this dark room, and this giant glowing screen is going to annoy everybody, but I am important. And this tweet that just came in is super important, right? Someone just WhatsApped me that, you know, outside is raining. So none of this shit that we've all paid for too much matters. And I'm going to be a dirtbag and continue. No,
they're inconsiderate.
That is
all right,
the beginning and end.
I know I think I've mentioned this to Douglas, but I can't remember if I did this on the podcast. I just wanted to say as a side note, something that used to always kind of bother me in the theater in Trinidad, I used to always see it, and it used to always make me laugh, that they would have all of the previews and all of the ads up, but they had, like, this this theater message that came up saying, like, if someone is bothering you, you know, noise or whatever reason, you can text the usher with your phone. You can take out your phone, you can just so text this number and your seat number, and we'll come and we'll check out whatever. I never used it, but like, I was just saying to myself, if it's someone who's annoying me with their phone and I take out my phone to call someone to deal with it, does it make me the worst person for using my phone?
No, not really, but it's still a dumb idea. Like,
fuck you, Damien.
You're welcome, Davis. <Dennis. laughs> There's people just that don't, it's this, like, we see these type of people everywhere. It's people who don't feel they should wait in lines. It's people who, you know, what present their problems as being more important than everybody else's problems. They just don't care. And there's nothing tangible to keep them in check. Sure, you could embarrass them or whatever, but how do you rectify that? Byron, go over there and punching them in the face, which is a criminal act.
And the police station is right around the corner.
There's not much that can be done. Right? It is the reason why there's theaters that take it so seriously as to, you know, when you come in there, like, look, you can't bring in your phone. If you're a doctor and you need to watch this movie, then you can't watch this movie.
I mean, there are theaters like the Alamo Draft House where they have thrown people out for it and banned them, and people,
like, don't come back.
Like,
and
they just have a blanket decision that if you do it, we're going to throw you out.
Yeah, and don't come back, because fuck you guys. This is dirtbags.
Right. Like, even, like, this is, like, the stupidest thing that I found. It's the problem we are talking about, but it's kind of stupid the way the internet responded, I find. Apparently, during the New York Film Festival, which is happening, like, right now, during a screening of 12 Years a Slave, with all of the cast and everyone's there, someone was complaining about some blonde woman texting on her phone, like, bright screen and everything. Like, regular people, not just going, like, honey, can you please?
Right.
She's like, fuck you, I'm doing work. And literally, quotes.
Right. Then come out of the theater.
Find out later on, the woman is Madonna. And Tim League has come out and said Madonna is banned from the Alamo Draft.
Yeah.
All these things. I'm like, I get where all of this is coming from. But regardless of who it is, why does it have to be that? Like,
no, it is, Andrew, it is simple social rules, right? You just don't do certain things. Like, it is not, like, you can go into a hospital and scream all you want. It is not illegal, right? You can't be sent to prison for screaming inside of a hospital. But it's understandable that you don't do it, right? You don't go in there and play loud music. Like, those are dirtbag things to do. And if you think you're more special than everybody else, right? Then you need to go off somewhere. If you can't follow these improvements, then just go somewhere else where you don't have to follow them. But even if you're Madonna and you're doing work, why have you come to this theater to do? Why are you coming here and annoying all the people around you? Because you're Madonna and you're worth a lot of money? Who gives a shit, right? It is simple. It is like, people are pretending that not answering your phone inside of a theater is this hard thing. That is impossible. We live in an age where information is constant. What if something happens? Whatever, whatever, whatever. Right? But people only say that because they want to continue behaving like assholes. It is if Carib said, if you're going into the theater, you have to hand in your phone. Right? I'd gladly hand it back. Because I know that I'm not that important, but a lot of people need to feel that way. And so they carry on like this. And then they get very defensive when people go, you're being a real asshole, right? Just put away your phone. No. Because what? Because you think you're special. But I'm trying to watch the movie that both of us, I paid to come in, so why can't I watch it? Because the agreement is, we're watching the movie. That is it. All we're coming here to do is eat terrible popcorn and watch this movie. But you can't do that because you're better than everybody. Then leave. Please leave. Go and be better somewhere else, far away from you. But there's not much we can do. Not until I become supreme leader of Jamaica and put in the movie watching laws. And then we'll see.
The movie watching, yeah, the movie watching,
yeah. The movie watching act, the proper movie watching act
has been passed
by Lord Damien.
Movies shall not be played in the incorrect aspect ratio.
Right. No. That is going to be in the bylaws of opening our actual movie theater. But the laws of watching the movies is No cell phones. If you're watching a movie and you take out a cell phone, it's a mandatory fine of 10 times whatever your cell phone costs. Would you like to buy 10 more cell phones? Since your cell phone is so awesome and you have to bring it here, it's a fine. And if you break it twice, then you're not legally not allowed to have a cell phone in the country. You get 2 strikes.
Alright, so the question I want to ask this week, it kind of ties into what we do, which is this general love of movies and this idea of the fact that we constantly consume these movies all the way back into history with this notion of just needing to consume movies. And even because it's fun, and even these movies which have been put in this spot where they're like, these are movies you should see. So you know, someone finds out, oh, I haven't watched Citizen Kane yet. That's a movie people tell me about. I kind of want to know 2 things. Number one, what is at this point in time your most egregious blind spot? Because this is something I ask you guys repeatedly, like just as an update.
Musicals.
What is your most egregious blind spot? And more importantly, the second part I want to ask about is, what is your response to people when they find this out and they kind of have this, like, I found this more and more through movie lovers who have this response of, how dare that be your blind spot?
What, you haven't seen all the movies I have seen?
You're not a real movie watcher.
You're not.
Okay, guys. Calm down. Go with these nice people in the van here. Take you to someplace safe and special. Goddamn lunatic.
Damon, you haven't seen this musical I love?
Yeah.
How dare you?
I remember when, after I met you, and we started, I realized, oh, there's people who like movies almost as much as I like movies. And because you don't meet a lot of, there's not a lot of us in Jamaica.
Not really.
We think so, but we're fooling ourselves.
Now,
started watching movies. Of course, you guys had seen a lot of movies that I hadn't, because my movie upbringing was a lot of shoot and blow and then shoot some more. And so, like, foreign films which weren't westerns were a no go. And a lot of the indie films that we watch that made me feel dirty every single time I watch them, and it makes me feel even worse that I like them so much. That was like a giant, like, I hadn't seen most of those movies. And so, you know, when I started, of course, you turn to the internet because that is what we do all the time, and you know,
lists are a big help.
You start, you're right. Use list, you listen to podcasts, and you find that, you know, there are agreed upon movies, and then there are movies for certain niches. So if you decide that you like this genre, then, you know, people steer you towards these type of movies. But once you're in it, like we are, then becomes more the movies that we search for become more and more esoteric. It's not just, if someone hands any of us a list of 100 movies from anywhere in the world, we'd have seen about half of those movies, because we've seen a lot. So now it is getting narrower and narrower and narrower, and that is where,
so it's like the Zazie movies, right, is what you're saying.
And that is where dirtbags come in and say, you know, you're not a real connoisseur unless you've seen all this horseshit over here.
How have you not seen all of Kieslowski?
Yeah. How have you not seen this, and how have you not seen this? And for a time, especially what listening to film spotting, it felt like there was a bar, but the bar kept moving, because these guys saw movies at festivals, or, you know, movies that were in libraries that no normal people don't have access to, but because these guys are the guys, you know, they watch all these movies, And the bar kept moving and moving. I'm like, I need to keep up. But they keep moving the bar, you know. These are our Angry Young Men trilogy, marathon, and this and that. And, you see, and then one day I just went, I don't need to. This is not what I'm trying to do is catch up to these guys, but these guys have had about a decade or two on me, and I'm not planning to die tomorrow.
Really?
So I not planning.
In this country, yeah, you should really think about it.
I have like 2 more years. I don't know how Douglas has lasted so long, because he should be dead. based on the average.
Based on the average, yes.
So you're saying we have 3 years?
Yeah, we have like 3 years.
Okay.
It's all over. And then I realized, oh, I have all this time to watch all these movies. And if there's movies I don't get to, guess what? It wouldn't have mattered. Because I'd be dead.
you know, the truth about it is that, like, I used to have that about me with blind spots. There are some which are really egregious. Like, I used to have Citizen Kane. I hadn't seen until you forced me to watch it. And stuff like that. There, like, I think if I was to list off my top one, like, first of all, I'm doing this thing where I'm forcing myself to watch these movies out throughout the year. And I think the number one in my head that I don't even have queued up on this list for this year is King Kong, the original King Kong. I remember seeing, because for some reason it's such a revered character and a revered film that I'm willing to watch it regardless. I've never even seen the original Godzilla. Right?
You don't need to see any of those. You just said 2 movies people should watch.
But that podcast, Film Spotting, is a podcast which actually taught me, because I went through the same thing as you, where I was like, oh shit, they've seen these every week where they would do their top fives. I would write down 5 movies
I've never seen any of these, and I'd find them, and I
would go into this mode of just being frantically wanting to see those 5 movies before the next episode comes out. But slowly but surely I started recognizing this thing which taught me the other way to look at it, which I think it was this year. They did an episode where Kempinar admitted that he finally, at this point in time, saw The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, is a movie which we have.
Right, and if I'd known that when I started listening to Film Spotting, I'd have stopped listening. Yeah. I'm sorry, you guys have what?
and that was the point in time where I recognized that it is okay to be within the discussion and to be knowledgeable, but at the same time not an encyclopedia, and to be reaching for that encyclopedic knowledge but possibly never actually getting to it, and it would be fine. You'll be okay.
No, but
we will all agree you still like movies.
No, you'll never get there. That is the thing. More movies are released every year, every day,
and 80% of them we shouldn't be watching anyways.
And you cannot watch all of them. And even if you do, what we say, alright, we're going to filter out, because we're not watching movies by certain people, and you know, like Sharknado and all of that. We're never going to watch any of those. Even if you filter out all the crofts, as we put it, you still never get there. There's always going to be more movies that you haven't seen. And I realized chasing that essential dream was detrimental to how much I like watching the movies I like to watch. And over that period when I was trying to, you know, close out all these blind spots, I stopped watching the movies that I love. So even if there's a movie that I was watching in my, you know, ramp up to watch all of the, to close out these lists, there'd be movies that I just wasn't watching. And I'm like, Damon, why are you doing that? You used to sit down and watch movies to make yourself feel better. But if all you're going to do is, alright, today it is this movie, today it is that movie, then just watch the things that you love, and anything else that you don't watch is fine. Because the arguments that you're going to have, if someone comes up to you and say, you haven't seen this movie, so you aren't as special or as movie loving as me, Damien, you know your response is going to be, I don't give a shit. What? It's not like a real argument. There's people who have seen more football than me. That doesn't mean they love football
No.
Me.
If they saw Gary Lineker alive, they
right,
they
then,
they,
right,
more
then they have more right to say the nonsense that they think about football. No. I've been watching football since, you know, before you were a boy. Okay. That literally means nothing. Right? What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. I like it, and you like it, but you want to feel superior to me because you've watched 10 more movies. By all means. Whatever. If they start giving out peace prizes for watching movies, then the Nobel Peace Prize for being a movie douchebag goes to these dirtbags.
Douglas has been quite quiet throughout
yes,
this whole.
Well, no, because, again, I kind of agree with Damian. I don't. I left Damien a present.
That's pretty good.
And it just works so well with the picture.
A lot of delivery on Andrew's face.
Yes.
I'm afraid of where this tablet is going to go now.
I should take a screen cap of that. Send it out because it's pretty good.
It's perfect. oh my goodness. So yeah, no, I agree with Damien. I'm not a big fan of that blind spot argument. I think
else,
no, I haven't. I didn't change anything. I think there are movies that I would like to watch that I haven't. And I probably will never get to them because I'm a lazy bastard, but that's how it goes. Does that make
shit.
Me, you know, does that mean that I don't enjoy the movies that
you
I watch,
you know,
as much as other people? I don't think so. Does it mean that,
and even if that's what it means,
yeah, exactly. And I actually spoke to this point on the last podcast to say that, you know, sometimes when, like, so I watch movies to enjoy movies, and
Lies.
I talk on this podcast about movies, hopefully, that I enjoy. Lately, it hasn't been that much enjoyment, though.
But
the truth of the matter is, when somebody comes to me and starts talking about movies and how much they love movies, and then it's all about, you know, the metaphorical mysticism that is akin to Dostoevsky's, and there comes a point where I'm just like, all right, friend, you're getting a little bit too pretentious for your own
good. It's the way the camera sways,
and I know I get as like that. And the funny thing is, I know I get like that sometimes.
But whenever we start instantly mocking ourselves. This is why we it is the reason we came up with the list. We're like, all right, here what? Oh, everything on the list is pretty good. Because
yeah.
We're not going to go through it. Oh, you know, the cinematography in this shot. You know, just the way it merges and melds and brings it. Like, what are you talking about? How is the movie good? I don't know. All right. So, yeah, there's people. And it is the same. But I find that is the thing with all aspects of nerddom. Once I get too nerd, like, I'm a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I get into something, I start looking at it in terms of numbers. With music, I'm like, alright, I'm trying to, you know, discover new music. I said, alright, I need a list of these things. It's going to take me X amount of time to go through these albums. I listen to every album this amount of times, and based on what people have said. But then you find that there'll come a point where you see people starting to go too far, and you have to recognize it early, or you'll find yourself down there, you know, just right when you hear people. And there's people who the second an artist becomes famous,
yeah,
they're no longer
cool. Yeah,
right, and that is where it comes from. It stems from they need to feel special. So if everybody knows this artist, then they're no longer special, right? Their taste in movies questionable.
Mm-hmm.
Because normal ass people who know nothing about music have been listening to music for years, and I'm the special one in terms of music. And so if Damian knows whoever the XX is, then they're no longer listenable because I have to find new people. And on and on. And it happens in everything. Unlike Andrew, who spends time with, you know, trying to get in contact with people on the internet, you know, try to converse with them, I stay far. I just want to find out, you know, essentially the facts about all of the things, music and, you know, equipment or whatever. And you find people start to argue about the minutiae and they forget the whole, like, my favorite aspect of that is audiophiles. Because those people are they are lunatics. Like, we should lock up all of them because they're
crazy. You included, by the way.
But Douglas, there's a... I realize that, alright, hear what. I need better speakers, I need better this. But if I need to start saying to people, my system is better than your system because of these gold fiber cables that I've purchased. So we have the same equipment and I'm still going to say that, oh, you know, I'm not going to argue with you about the type of music that we listen to. I'm going to argue with you about the equipment that we listen to. No. The reason I want better speakers is to make the music sound better. Not because I want better speakers so that I can say, Douglas and Andrew don't have the speakers.
By the way, you do realize, right, that as we get older, that is going to happen.
Right. But we have to keep it in check. We have to.
Jet skis will make us happy.
No, we have to keep it in check. It is... This morning, me and my sister was watching this guy go to the edge of a volcano for absolutely no reason. Right? He's saying that, you know, he's climbed all the mountains and whatever. And I was saying to my sister, that is all well and good. But what he's doing is dumb. And he has forgotten that all of the shit that he's doing, he's not doing it because it is some grand thing that people should aspire to. He's doing it because he started doing it a while back. He enjoyed it. But it is still dumb. Like, you going to the edge of a volcano to see lava. Like, we know what lava is. You going to... That is dumb. You're not doing it for anybody other than yourself. And he lost sight of the fact that what he's doing is stupid a long time ago. Yeah, and it's, people do it with cars, people do it with houses. But at the end of the day, we need shit to fill our lives, to make this boring ass life less boring. We use movies, we use music, whatever. But we have to keep in check that. Like, even when I laugh at people who watch terrible movies, there's a guy at work that said, there's Cuba Gooding Jr. movie. That is a Lifetime movie, like a TNT movie special called Gifted Hands or some shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Gifted Hands.
Right,
it's about the doctor.
Better than whatever. And I looked at him and I go, look, Johnson & Johnson commissioned this movie. Like, that alone means that the movie is terrible. And as I say it, you know, I laugh at myself because I am only saying it to annoy him. If he likes the movie, I watched the movie and I thought it was terrible. Mm-hmm. But him watching the movie, it doesn't make his enjoyment of the movie any less if I don't like the movie.
That same thing happened to me a while back with This Is The End, where someone was going on and on about how they hated This Is The End. And like, I could sense that there was a part of the hatred that came from all of the dicks and all of the gay jokes and all of those. And, and I started out my argument where I was going to by saying, first of all, saying, quote, I don't like this movie is a valid argument and I will not fight you on that at all. Fight. However, and I start listing off all of these reasons as to why every reason he stated was complete and utter bullshit.
The end scene is pretty. It's pretty good.
It's pretty amazing. And then he just kind of stopped me. I went, Andrew, calm down. You've taken the nerddom a little far.
The only people I spend time arguing with movies about is you lunatics, because it's fun, right? Other people outside, I don't argue with them about movies. I've seen more movies, right? So my base to gauge whether a movie is good or not is broader. But that doesn't mean that I am right. I say it on this podcast because it's funny. I find it funny to say that I'm right and that Andrew is wrong.
I'm always wrong.
Right. That is the true first true thing he said.
And Sarah Polly is the greatest.
No.
All right.
No.
Wow. Speaking only to Douglas.
Yeah. Wait, this isn't a continuous stream
nice,
of truth.
Nice try.
He had a rare moment of clarity. I know he's gone back.
Even a broken clock is right twice. Or some such things.
You know, I understand why people have this urge to feel special and be better than other people.
Yeah.
Right? But there's nothing factual about anything you say about these movies.
Exactly.
Right?
And anyway, I just want us to end this conversation by just clarifying,
mm-hmm.
yes, we are actually better than all
people
in the world. And
I am better than all of them.
Exactly.
We're primarily
better than
we are because we've seen more.
His day at work. Why don't you tell our daughter about it, honey?
Janie, today I quit my job. And then I told my boss to go fuck himself, and then I blackmailed him for almost $60,000 past the asparagus.
Your father seems to think this kind of behavior is something to be proud of.
And your mother seems to prefer that I go through life like a fucking prisoner while she keeps my dick in a mason jar under the sink.
How dare you speak to me that way in front of her? And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone passed the asparagus.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner now.
I already have a job.
No, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. We'll just leave it all up to Carolyn. You mean you're going to take care of everything now, Carolyn? Yes, I don't mind. I really don't. You mean everything? You don't mind having the sole responsibility? Your husband feels he can just quit his job and you don't...
Will
like,
someone
who's
please
pay the fucking
ask
bill?
Me the
okay,
fucking
guys,
experience.
I'm not going to be a part of this.
Shut up!
Happens next. I don't want to live in my father's house no more. I don't want to live with my father's dead. You can't forgive what you can't forget. I don't want to live in my father's house no more. I don't want to fight.
Families in movies, and specifically fake families. Because they even sent me that email. I'm like, yeah, I guess that could be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
When I was thinking about this list, I was trying to think of good families, happy families, and the more and more I thought about it,
in
there
movies?
Aren't that many of
Who
those
wants
in
to
movies.
See happy families in movies?
Well, there's Seventh Heaven, right?
Is that a movie?
Can we use TV?
That's a TV show.
If we can use TV,
I
am see, changing
yeah.
a lot of
I don't see why we couldn't use TV.
But anyways, the first one I'm going to mention is the Fox family, and that's from Fantastic Mr. Fox. Because...
Of course it would.
I think Wes Anderson kind of takes a cake when it comes to putting families in movies and just... kind of having them as the craziest things in the world. But
do you like weirdness?
He does.
Yes,
he
I do.
Yeah.
Have you met Wes Anderson? No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. You haven't lived your life properly. So.
Fantastic Mr. Fox is great.
Yeah,
it's
really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Next.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
My first family is The Incredibles.
Oh.
I don't know if you've heard of The Incredibles.
How did I not even
Incredible.
Think of that? They are not even on my list.
Nah.
Wow. That is incredible.
The shit.
Yes,
it's
the
best.
Alright.
Can't believe we haven't gotten another Incredibles movie.
Oh. It needs to happen.
All of Cars
Pixar.
Goddamn 2.
Then there's
Whoa.
Planes.
Trains.
So, okay, listen. My top 5, as usual. The ones that are going to get snapped up quick,
mm-hmm.
right quick, are up front. So, let's talk about Stoker. The family Stoker is awesome.
I have
a
retort to that family.
So much.
I have a family.
So much.
That family.
You can go ahead because it's your
year.
Because it's your turn.
Yeah,
by the way, I just found out. Am I crazy? I thought Stoker was last year. IMDb is telling me it's
this
year.
Year.
I'm
yeah.
so happy for
Came
that.
Out
yeah.
in March.
Yeah.
Came
that
out
movie's
in March.
So good.
I have it on my list.
Of course, it's on my list.
No,
of course,
like
it's on my list.
Fantasy list.
Huh?
I had it on my fantasy list.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay, yeah.
Jump up and down like a school.
But yes, the family, the Stoker family is just
the
amazing.
They're the best.
They are the best.
They're the worst. They're still the best.
But Andrew, you said you have a retort.
Yeah.
I have a family that beats that family.
Impossible.
In another movie that came out this year.
Mm-hmm. Impossible.
And it is the Ryan Gosling family of Only God Forgives. Right,
fair enough. I haven't watched the movie yet, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they're
but,
not. That mother.
Yeah, but the family dynamic in there wasn't. Alright, fine.
It was like if you think Nicole Kidman in Stoker is a bad mother, I'd like to propose.
Alright, fine. If we're using
Kristen Scott,
yeah,
Thomas,
we're using
as
worst people in the world being related to other worst people, then fine.
I need to make you watch that movie.
It's week. Not better than Stoker, though. There is no way Only God Forgives is better than Stoker.
I've been
nope.
willing to put up that argument.
Nope. I'll fight you. I will fight you.
Douglas can be the ref.
Sure. Alright, since we're just going to take shit right off the top, how about the Corleones?
Alright,
in
there we
a
go.
Certain movie.
Yeah.
I actually was purposely leaving off mob families.
Because
that's
the Father of God.
Other thing.
Okay.
Father of God, I'm pretty sure it's the
Yes.
Okay.
That's because
yeah.
he says it better, right?
He does, yes.
Father
of God. So. In the spirit of taking shit,
mm-hmm.
Andrew, I am going to take American Beauty because that family is awesome.
Because they're the worst, and I hate all of you.
So, a film which is probably one of my favorite movies that happens to kind of focus on family and tying in with Sarah Polley's stories we tell a lot,
mm-hmm.
focusing on knowing more about your family and more about your father and your parentage.
It's
Big
cheaper
Fish.
By the dozen.
Big Fish. Like, Big Fish is just an amazing movie, and every time I watch it, it's just so weird to understand that that is a Tim Burton movie, because you can see Tim Burton in it, but it's as if he turned on the lights that he's had off all his life, and it's so beautiful.
I can see
that
he's in it because Helena Bonham Carter is in it, and there's a giant in there for no reason, and
a two-headed woman.
Yep, that is a Tim Burton-ass Tim Burton movie. All right. Griswold family.
Oh,
vacation
beautiful.
Movies.
That family is perfect. That family is great.
Because, of course.
Okay, so in back along the theme of Wes Anderson does great, crazy families, let's talk about the Tenenbaums and how royal they are. The Royal Tenenbaums it has the greatest family in the world, with Gene Hackman, Angela Houston, both of the sorry,
Wilson
brothers.
Both of the Owen.
The Owen
Wilson
brothers. The Owen Wilson brothers.
Both of the
Owen. There's Owen Wilson A and there's Owen Wilson B. You don't see him that often.
And he's just not as good as Mr.
There's
A.
Clive
but,
Owen.
Yeah.
And there's also
Owen
Ben
Wilson.
Stiller in the middle.
Yes, Ben Stiller. And then, of course, you've got the adopted
Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Michael Owen.
That movie is great. That family is great.
You know, on a side note, this isn't in my list, but it's a movie I've been meaning to rewatch forever. A Wes Anderson movie, The Darjeeling Limited.
That's actually also on my list. That was a B-list just in case somebody took Royal Tenenbaums.
Like, I want to rewatch that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. That movie is so good.
Remember when that movie came out?
Jump for joy.
And I didn't like it that much at the time. Talking about siblings when it comes to family conversations, I think my favorite movie when it comes to like a sibling film is Hannah and Her Sisters, the Woody Allen movie. I just said it's not on my list.
Oh, I thought you were going to come with something else.
Something good.
Yeah.
What, Three Ninjas?
Actually, that would be a great addition. I'm not putting that on my list.
Have you guys seen Hannah and Her Sisters? I adore that movie so much. Is that Damon saying no, you don't like that movie?
No, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen that movie?
Hannah and Her Sisters?
Yes, it's a Woody Allen movie with Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Uh-huh. Angelica Houston is in it, I believe. There's this girl who's in a lot of Woody Allen movies, but I can't remember.
This is not the one with Ed Norton.
Mia Farrow.
This is not the one with Ed Norton?
Ed Norton is not in this movie. There's a ton of people in this movie. Yeah. It's a great movie. It's about this guy who's married to one of the sisters and is in love with Hannah and decides to stalk her and try to get with her, which is the sister of his wife. And all of these things happen. You see the whole three relationships happening throughout the movie. It is great.
You said Willie, I don't say I don't believe.
You just cue out.
I want to put the family from We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh, yes.
But I will not, because that's...
No, that's not fair. You can't say that and then pull it back.
So Douglas and I have sadistic families in our list.
Right.
So you refuse to go there.
We shouldn't do that. Because nothing about that family dynamic. It's good. But...
Are Eskimo Brothers allowed?
Stop it. Ezra Miller is in another family-oriented movie. And this one is actually a family that I would like to be in. The Rizzo family from City Island.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty fun movie. I don't know about the family, but that's a fun movie.
It was the family that we all laughed at, because they're crazy people, all of them.
Garcia just
falls apart. You know what makes me sad is that Andrew just reminded me a while ago of a movie that I want to be on my list, but I only have two left. And I have two really good picks that I want to put on right now.
You could just whisper one of them to me, and then you can get space for yours. I'm joking. Go on.
All right, so...
The Pocahontas.
Okay, you know what? I'm not going to talk about this movie. You might actually... You still have some chances, so you might take it. Knowing you, you will. I'm about to bend the rules here.
What?
Right? As
Eskimo Brothers?
Do. Oh, it gets worse. It's even worse than Eskimo Brothers. So we talked about fake families anyway. So fake kind of is a broad word. So listen, I'm going to put down, I think my number two is going to be Baron Munchausen. Right, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and technically there was no family in that movie, but what that movie does is it kind of creates a family unit with the Baron, with Sarah Polley, who you know a kind of nod to our movie today, as well as all of the guys with the powers. You had how can I not remember his name? It's a funny name from
Terry G's past. I haven't seen that movie since you made me watch it.
Okay, there you go. But there are about three different people. One who sleeps, one who sleeps but is very fast, one who is not very smart but is very strong, and another one who is very short but can blow really well. And they are a part of...
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, but he's not a part of the family. He's actually a very mean man.
I love that. That was what I remember the most. I love Robbie Williams.
Yeah, he was good in that movie. But, you know, they create this family unit, and just the way... The whimsical nature of this film and the whimsical nature of those relationships is just wonderful.
So, I'm pretty sure I'm stealing something from Damien's list, and if I'm not, he's forgotten something really horrible. But this is, like, the first family which came to mind when I was starting to do this list. And it's, like, one of the most fun families in movies that I've seen ever, and it is a family from Easy A. with
you know what, I don't miss podcasts.
I like Emma Stone. I like, what's her name? Pamela Arquette or something like Patricia. Patricia Arquette. I like her.
They're and, just the best.
And Stanley Tucci is just awesome in any movie.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We're about to take the bucket list off of our bucket list. We're put in this movie.
What's my number
oh, yeah.
one?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
my number one.
That's why I keep telling you, just bottom load all the good ones.
He shouldn't be talking about Easy A. Go away.
And I know that my top two, nobody ever thought of them. I know this. Right? So I'm good.
I have to go call you for nonsense. Alright. Where am I?
You're number four. I mean, number two, sorry.
Number two.
Yeah.
The Croods. I'm just going to go with it.
Oh, really?
I like that movie.
Was that movie good?
Yeah.
Wow.
Far better than it had any right.
Like, Nick Cage was funny in that movie.
Wait, yeah. Nick Cage is in that movie?
Yeah.
He plays
he
like
plays
a father.
The father crew.
Okay.
I didn't even notice before I went into the theater to watch this movie. Ryan Reynolds is
yeah.
in it.
Ryan Reynolds
okay.
is
oh,
the
is he
guy.
The, like, boyfriend guy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I can see that happening. All right. Wow.
That movie's fun.
It's
wow.
really fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. For my number one, again, I'm going to bend the rules. Again, it's going to not be a real family, but another situation where the movie is just so wonderful and the relationships between these people are so family-like. It's just great. And it's Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump just creates this ever-widening network with his essentially awesomeness, his idiot savantness.
Yes.
You know, he's got Bubba. He's got Sergeant, is it Sergeant or Colonel? Colonel Dan?
I don't remember.
Sergeant Dan.
Sergeant Dan. You know, he's got, of course, his eventual wife in Robin Wright Penn.
Don't you love that moment where he's like, my name's Forrest too. I wonder why that is.
And of course, there's Mama and her wonderful stories about chocolate.
It's weird when, like, I saw that movie when it came out, which was
yeah.
like 95-ish, right? So
about there.
So I would have
been a little
like,
bit. Yeah, about 95.
I would have been
10
or less
yeah.
when that movie came out. I didn't realize until like I was a grown man watching that movie that his mother banged the principal.
Yes, but not just that. You know what else I didn't notice until I was a little bit older and started watching it again? That
your mama loves you, son.
That time when he went into Robin Wright's bedroom and you know, I just thought he sat down and felt weird, but no, he enjoyed himself in that room.
In the business.
Andrew, what's your number one? Or wait, no, we've gone through number ones now.
No, this is number ones. You're okay. You don't know how to count?
No. Oh, so I haven't got my number one yet?
No.
But I've gone through five.
One of us don't know.
Wow.
One, two, three, four. I've gone through four.
Yeah.
Shit,
yeah,
I could
five.
Have said the one that I know is probably going to be your number one. God damn it, Andrew. What's your number one?
My number one.
If you say my number, I'm going to kill you. I'm just making you know, no. If you say it.
Is probably one of the few movies we've talked about where we kind of all agreed as to how much we love it in the last few years. And it is The Kids Are All Right.
Oh, yes!
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
Oh, okay.
Alright.
Alright.
Between Julianne Moore.
Yeah, we know who is in that movie.
Alright. Yeah, one more
right.
to go.
We have a
come on.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. Stop talking. Number one, with a bullet, away we go.
Okay, okay. And I get my number one, which is wonderful. The Brothers Bloom.
The Brothers, sure.
The Brothers Bloom with Mark Ruffalo and the inimitable What's-His-Face.
Yes, What's-His-Face. You know What's-His-Face?
No.
What's-His-Face? Mark Ruffalo and
What's-His-Face. Isn't it weird that I was having this conversation
dude,
with
guy.
Someone the other day where they were like, Ruffalo is this great actor that we all love. But we tend to forget what movies he's in really quickly.
No, alright, so hold on. I would almost argue, no, I am the biggest fan of Mark Ruffalo. But is Mark Ruffalo really that good an actor? Has
no,
he shown himself
no,
to be that good an actor?
He has shown that he's great at acting.
What he hasn't done is pick good movies. He's in a lot of garbage.
Yes, he is.
There's a lot of, like, I remember.
But he's also in a lot of good movies where he's just a normal person.
Where he just shows up.
He's not really doing anything special. So, like, what?
Now you see me.
Oh. But okay, where would you say he did, like, great acting chops? And I'm not saying that he hasn't, because there must be a reason why I love him so much.
Gloom. The Hulk.
Brothers Bloom, seriously? Go fuck yourself with the Hulk. The Brothers Bloom.
I'm sorry, the Hulk.
The kids are all right.
Again, he was just a normal guy, just being like, I'm a dad. Okay. No. Like, we need I'm saying, like, some Anthony Hopkins, some Johnny Depp level of, maybe that's not a good example, but some level of, like, I just.
Shutter Island. He was great in that movie.
Okay, well, you know what? I kind of blocked out that movie because it wasn't that good.
You don't like Shutter Island?
That movie's not that great.
Fuck you.
I didn't say it was bad.
Douglas, you're not helping yourself.
That is one of the movies where the conversation is you don't love it.
I don't want to hear anything else from you. You're going to stop talking now because I don't want to hear it. Just stop talking. You're not doing yourself any favors.
And of course there was Zodiac, which I really liked to be.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Again, he was in a great movie with that one, but he was just a normal person. He was just Zodiac. Just sitting down, drinking some beers, erasing some memories. That's all he was doing, you know?
Like him dancing in his...
I love him in that movie. Don't get me wrong.
Talking.
And I love him
Shut
in
up.
Almost every movie
Your
he's
face.
In. But like, has he
Zodiac,
been shown that
Reservation
great?
Road... And then he was in The Brothers Bloom. Those are the three movies where it went from, oh, it's just a dude. And then, although he was in Blindness, but I haven't seen that and will never see that.
Oh my goodness, Blindness. He was in
remember that movie?
I remember
he was the leader.
Thinking that wasn't that great. was he the one that, was it his wife that was blind and he went and could see, or is it the other way around?
Right. Then he was.
It was his wife that could see, wasn't it?
The kids are all right. Shutter Island.
I think so.
Yes.
Went blind. I remember.
Where
that.
Was he in Date Night?
Date Night.
I don't remember him being in Date Night.
He was a random person in the movie. But anyways, I think we should kind of wrap up at this point.
And then he's in Now You See Me.
So thanks for listening as usual. The podcast is available through the website, G-Man Reviews, through iTunes, Stitcher, all sorts of podcasting applications. Douglas, you're on Twitter. You're DJ. I lost his name, so people can address you with all of their stories we tell about regularly. Damien is Damien_White. I am
sure.
@ G-Man Reviews. And, you know, just say hey. Anyways, good night and thanks for listening.